Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hey, everybody. We have a midweek mini podcast for a change. And I mean that. This is a departure. The White House announced earlier this week that President Biden has decided that we will be pulling our remaining troops out of Afghanistan by September 11th, the 20th anniversary of the attack by al-Qaeda on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and what we believe would have been the Capitol if those brave souls on United Flight 93 had not taken on the hijackers. That attack was planned from Afghanistan, where the Taliban had been giving safe haven to al-Qaeda and its leader, Osama bin Laden. Peter Bergen produced the first TV interview of bin Laden by Western media back in 1997. I interviewed Peter for this podcast last January, about a month before Trump and his administration had reached an agreement with the Taliban to withdraw our troops from Afghanistan by May 1st of this year. The decision announced earlier this week is an incredibly difficult one. As Bergen said in our wide-ranging interview, there are no good decisions here. I say wide-ranging interview because Bergen and I spoke about a lot of subjects that day, encompassed by his book, Trump and His Generals, and we're playing just about 8 or 9 minutes about Afghanistan and bin Laden, and I think you'll find it very interesting. I know I did. I've been to Afghanistan 5 times on 4 USO tours and once as a U.S. senator in 2010. I traveled with Carl Levin, chairman of the Senate Armed Service Committee at that time. And I have to say, my experience was that I learned a lot more about both wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, on my USO tours. Senator Levin and I stayed at the embassy in Kabul. We had dinner with the ambassador and members of the Afghan government, with cabinet members. We met with President Karzai. We spent quite a bit of time with General McChrystal. We went to a forward operating base where we were briefed by this British officer who was straight out of Monty Python with a pointer and a blackboard. And we have a company here, 128 strong. And over here, 2 platoons, 73 strong. Now, this is in 2010, and we had begun a buildup of our troops in Afghanistan, ordered by President Obama. I met with the CIA station chief. I met with the general who was in charge of training the Afghan troops. And I got to say, I learned next to nothing. We were told exactly what they were supposed to tell us. Nothing that they told us was going to happen actually happened. And it was basically a dog and pony show. On the other hand, when I was on tour with the USO, we would go every day to 2 or 3 or 4 DFACs. DFACs are dining facilities. And every time I got my tray and started heading toward the tables to sit down, I could see guys who wanted to talk, who wanted to tell me what they were experiencing. I met with guys who were gung-ho. I met with guys who were freaked out especially guys who are outside the wire most of the time, guys who hated the war, but love their buddies. I met a one-star general in Iraq who told me on my second trip in 2004, I have to respect the president of the United States, but if I got Rumsfeld in my sights, I would not hesitate to squeeze off a round. I learned nothing on the CODEL, my congressional delegation trip, or next to nothing. And I don't know how much we learned in what will be an almost 20-year war. Not long after this interview that I did last year with Peter Bergen, the Trump administration made that deal with the Taliban that we would leave by May 1st. And now we're extending to September. They announced that we will be out by September 11th. I have no idea why they chose to peg it to the anniversary. That just seems like an odd choice. But as Bergen says, in this kind of thing, there are no good choices. Certainly not a good choice for women in Afghanistan. But what would staying there ultimately do? Some choices are worse than others. And in this case, let's hope the president has chosen wisely. So when we come back, I'll be talking to Peter Bergen. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Let's start with Afghanistan. And there's one thing I do want to ask you about, which is this peace supposed agreement,
yeah,
which is basically feels to me like us getting out of Vietnam.
One of the themes of the book is the commonalities between Trump and Obama once you get past their rhetorical styles.
The caution of not getting involved and actually starting to withdraw troops, which was a disaster in Iraq, actually.
It was. I mean, and you know, it was a George W. Bush plan that the Obama team then implemented, and they wanted to get out. That turned out to be a failure. ISIS was at the gates of Baghdad. You know, 3 years later, you know, the United States, there are sins of commission and sins of omission. And there are second order effects to doing nothing. There are second order effects to pulling out. There are second order effects to putting people into places. And we elect presidents so he or she will make the right decisions or the least bad decisions. Because when it comes to these difficult decisions, you're not making great decisions. You're just making least bad decisions by the time it gets to the president's desk.
Yeah, least bad, meaning you've been given the situation by previous bungles, including Cheney going, there is no doubt that Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. And that's just that was just not true.
It wasn't. So in Afghanistan, you know, Obama wanted to draw down to zero. And then after a lot of discussion with his team, at the end of his second term, he left 8,500 troops there. There were some risks going to zero, including the Taliban takes over much of the country and ISIS and Al-Qaeda have this sort of launching pad.
Which is kind of what I feel like is going to happen 3 years from now or whatever that time frame is.
Yeah. By the way, this is an agreement with the Taliban. It's not ratified by the Senate.
Or it isn't an agreement with the Afghan government.
Right. So it's kind of in some ways, not a very meaningful piece of paper. And the Taliban, I was in Afghanistan when the Taliban ran the place. Anybody listening to this is familiar with their record with women, with girls, with education, with the economy, with essentially running a totalitarian, theocratic state to the extent that they could. We're just taking on faith that they've suddenly changed their minds about all that. I don't. You know, people are freaked out because they see us leaving. And, you know, when we leave, also, by the way, all our allies leave. You know, this war has gone on for a long time. But I think some of it is about how we frame what we're doing. We're still in South Korea more than half a century after the end of the Korean War. In 1953, South Korea was one of the poorest countries on the planet. Now it's one of the richest. We have twice the number of American troops in South Korea that we do in Afghanistan right now. I think there's a reason that South Korea has prospered under an American national security umbrella. South Korea and Afghanistan are very different, agreed. We've left Afghanistan before, by the way, in 1989. We closed our embassy. We zeroed out aid. There was a civil war, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and we kind of didn't have much of a handle on any of that because we didn't have a presence there. It may be psychologically satisfying for some to say, hey, we're just sick and tired of this, we're going to pull out. It doesn't mean that peace will magically break out because you say you have a peace agreement, nor does it mean that you don't have some level of responsibility not to let the place disintegrate.
Now let's talk about some of these generals, okay? Yeah. Mattis was not in favor of pulling out of Afghanistan.
I mean, one of the themes I have in the book, which is kind of astonishing, is at one point Trump says, when with John Kelly in the room, his chief of staff, the guy he spends more time with than anybody else, that Afghanistan wasn't worth the death of one single American soldier.
Oh, yeah.
So John Kelly's son, Robert Kelly, was killed by an improvised explosive device in southern Afghanistan in 2010. Now, did Trump either not know that? Kind of a strange thing to say if he did know it, or is it just, I mean, just basically a sign of his sort of lack of empathy, or is just general level of ignorance? So the generals,
or both. That's the default always with him. It's, yeah. And he probably forgot in that moment, at least, that his chief of staff's son had died in this war when he said it was not worth one life.
Yeah.
And also, he probably forgot because he has absolutely no empathy for anyone.
I'm not a psychologist. One thing that Trump does.
You don't have to be.
Trump asks a lot of good questions in these meetings. And, you know, to his credit, he's like, you know, why are we there? Why are we spending this money? Could other people spend some of this money? You know, why are we still there 16, 17 years later? So these are all reasonable questions, and he asks them. The generals generally, in particular H.R. McMaster, who'd served in Afghanistan for 2 years and was kind of leading the charge that we shouldn't just sort of announce withdrawal dates and we should get the conditions better before we kind of draw down or make any announcements about drawdown, and was also in favor of a very small, relatively small, larger number of troops. Yeah, these meetings were the most contentious meetings of the Trump presidency, probably until now. On one side was Steve Bannon leading the America First kind of contingent, like, let's leave tomorrow. And on the other side, H.R. McMaster, who was leading the so-called globalist or internationalist side. And Mattis and certainly John Kelly were supporting H.R. McMaster, so was Rex Tillerson. But H.R. McMaster, in the words of somebody I quote in the book, was taking all the face shots because the president was very skeptical, had campaigned to get out. But in the end, he came around, and on August 21st, 2017, he gave a speech where he basically admitted, look, I've changed my mind. It's not something that he normally does.
You produced the first interview with Osama bin Laden back in 1997, right?
Yeah. And it was really the first time that he declared war against the United States to a Western audience. People didn't really pay a lot of attention to him at the time. It was only when Al-Qaeda blew up two American embassies almost simultaneously a year later that people really began to paying attention to him.
What was it like?
He reminded me slightly of Al Franken.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, a lot of people say that.
No, he was, very serious person surrounded by a lot of very serious other people. We knew very little about him when we met him in 97. I didn't even really know exactly what he'd look like. He was 6'4", very thin. He carried himself like a cleric. He wasn't a table-thumping revolutionary. He spoke in kind of very low tones and didn't seem to be particularly kind of an emotional person. But what he was saying was, full of anger against the United States because of its policies in the Middle East.
Where was this interview?
I mean, it was the middle of the night in a mud hut 6,000 feet up in an area near the city of Jalalabad in eastern Afghanistan. Now, they had blindfolded us. They changed vehicle three times. I mean, we didn't really know exactly where we were, but we had a general sense that we were in eastern Afghanistan around the area of Tora Bora, which is where he would disappear in the months after 9/11 before he was finally found in Abbottabad.
Yeah, and that's where... We took care of him.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the picture of him?
No.
Me neither. I had the opportunity to do that. I could, and I chose not to. I don't know
somebody
why.
Described it to me as Osama bin Laden with a big hole in his head.
I think that's what it was, and I just for some reason didn't want to see that.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if the Obama administration made the right call on that, because he certainly, there was still conspiracy theories that are out there that perhaps he wasn't killed. But certainly, I think it was the right call, perhaps in the immediate aftermath. You didn't want to inflame, incite attacks against Americans, and that was the thinking at the time.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like an Obama move, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure Trump wouldn't do that. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The early 2000s was a wild time for reality TV. There seemed to be an endless supply of shows that delivered entertainment for us, but trauma for children. I'm Misha Brown, the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Each week on The Big Flop, comedians join me to chronicle the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question, who thought this was a good idea? We recently looked behind the scenes of what was really going on at Abby Lee Miller's dance studio. Abby's biggest misstep wasn't screaming nonsensical catchphrases or throwing chairs on television, but instead, she was choreographing financial fraud in plain sight. Join me to break down all the wild details of Abby Lee Miller's story. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.